Welcome, one and all, to episode 89 of the NFL Draft Breakdown Podcast. I'm your host, Seth Cox. With me tonight, my co-host, Justin Higdon. And Justin, we're getting started with actual prospect previews for the 2018 NFL Draft. It's far too early. It's far too early to make predictions or statements or be bold. But it is about time to start previewing these prospects, guys that we'll be watching, potential risers, potential fallers, and anything else that comes along with this stuff. But before that starts, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good. It's never too early to start finalizing your takes on who's going to be good as a pro, because we know preseason football has started and we can already start making definitive takes off of the preseason games. So for example, Deshaun Watson last night had good stats. He rolled out a lot, and he connected on a few passes. I think he might have cracked that 49 mph on the radar gun a couple of times. I'm not sure. I didn't slow down the frames and do the Pythagorean theorem, but I'm pretty sure we can definitively say he's going to be a Hall of Famer. We can also definitively say that Mitch Trubisky is by far the best player from the 2017 draft. So, I think it's never too early to start making definitive and bold statements.
Exactly. I mean, that's what we're going to start with tonight as we preview the Big 12 and the Pac-12 heading into the 2017 college football season, 2018 NFL draft time. And we're going to start with the Big 12. And the Big 12 is – talent-wise, it's got some intrigue because Texas is finally coming back despite Charlie Strong's inability to win football games. He did a nice job recruiting.
He wanted to do it the right way, you know. So he kicked off all the five-star recruits that had misbehaved in some way and started from scratch. And, as we know, with big programs like Texas, that just doesn't fly with the booster. So Strong's out. My guy Tom Herman is in, and he turned Houston into a competitive, almost a playoff team, or at least into consideration a couple years ago. So
the Big 12 is headlined by two quarterbacks this year, and this is my initial, strong take statement on these guys. I don't know if either of these guys are NFL quarterbacks. We'll start with Mason Rudolph of Oklahoma State, 6'4", 235. I was trying to think of like the player comparison scale that I like to use and like where he would fall on the scale. And I kept coming back to a guy, Mike Glennon. And now he doesn't have the neck of Glennon, but he's a bigger guy in Rudolph, 6'4", 235. And you think he's going to be a powerful guy. You think he's going to have that big arm, really be able to push the ball down the field. But it seems like he has to work really hard to get the ball, not just vertical, but get it to his receivers on time on those out patterns, on those, deep ends, those crosses that aren't that take a little oomph behind them, using a very technical scouting term. And when I look at Rudolph, I don't see a guy right away that screams to me franchise quarterback. I see a guy that has some upside because of the size, but I wonder if he's going to go in that same range as a guy like Mike Glennon, that late day two, early day three, another guy. I don't know if his arm's nearly as strong, but, a guy like Davis Webb. And that's my initial coming into his senior season impression of Mason Rudolph. What about yours?
So Rudolph is a player, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think you and I both kind of had high hopes for him coming into last season when he was a junior.
Yep, we expected him to be kind of the – Pat Mahomes.
Yeah. I mean, we thought he'd be a riser because you did see a little bit of zip on some of the intermediate throws, and the guys put up good stats. I mean, I think that's to be expected in Oklahoma State's offense. He's got a great receiver in James Washington, who we'll talk about in a little bit. But yeah, I think what's coming out now is that you wonder about the arm strength of this guy. Like you said, very big, and the frame. The lack of zip, I guess, belies the frame. So it doesn't quite match up. And we've seen some pretty harsh criticism about this from other draft analysts. I think Justin Gamel at Gam Scout has been pretty tough on Mason Rudolph. I think our guy Justice was high on him, and so was Joe Marino. But then we saw that Tony Pauline, who's one of the most plugged-in draft analysts, said that that he's a little bit higher on Rudolph and gave him a fourth-round preseason grade, and that he's a little bit higher on Rudolph than the scouts that he's talked to. So that suggests an even later day three grade for Mason Rudolph. It could be indicative of why he decided to return to school for his senior year. And when we look at the quarterback class coming in, he seems to be the top senior on paper. Now we've got a huge variance of opinions on Mason Rudolph. I kind of fall into that. I thought he was a day two guy toward the end of the year, which says second or third round, like you said, with Mike Glennon going late third round. That sounds about right. To me, he's kind of on par with the top, what we thought were the top quarterbacks 2 years ago, when we said there were no first round quarterbacks and that all the quarterbacks like Cook, Goff, Wentz, Cardale Jones were all kind of lumped into that late second, mid to late second into the early fourth round range. So that's where Rudolph falls for me coming into the year, but I think he's going to put up big stats, and I think he's got potential to be a riser because it just depends on how many of these underclassmen declare. When there are fewer quarterbacks in the pool, then guys like Rudolph get pushed up, and I think he could be one of those guys.
The other guy is 19-year senior Baker Mayfield. He's got to be 25 now, right? Or is he going to be 24 this year?
No, he's actually not. He's not as old as you'd expect, but you know Mayfield has, because he started at Texas Tech as a walk-on. I believe he was a walk-on there, but his birth date is actually April 14th, 1995. So he'll be 23 as a senior.
Oh, okay. I just see a guy that is really a really, really fun college player, a Heisman type college player that ends up as a kind of a backup, back into the roster type quarterback in the NFL. I'd love to be proven wrong because I from the standpoint of excitement, I don't know if there's a guy I enjoy watching more than Baker Mayfield play quarterback. But from a pure quarterback standpoint, I'm not sure. He's much of a prospect at a 6 foot, 220 pounds. Not bad arm strength, but he's got a little Johnny Manziel to his game. And I just don't think he's quite as dynamic as Manziel was.
No question in my mind that he's not as dynamic as Johnny Manziel. I keep saying this on Twitter that PFF is going to love him, and I think they did last year because he's one of those guys that can connect for high percentage plays in the short area, and he's a player who can scramble a little bit, buy some time, run for first downs. But yeah, I agree with you, Seth. I don't think that he. I don't really see his game translating because you know he's a smaller guy. And I don't think he's going to be as fast as he looks sometimes when he's running the ball. I think he's still going to be a pretty quick player, and he'll test pretty well as far as quickness and maybe even 40 time. But I don't know how far that goes. He's not the type of improviser that like Russell Wilson is. And I was surprised. Again, going back to Tony Pauline, he said he had Mayfield as a fifth rounder. Either he himself or quoted scouts complimenting Mayfield's arm strength. And I've never been struck by Mayfield as thinking he's a guy with a ton of zip in his arm. So I don't know. Maybe, you know, maybe this is a player that's going to surprise us and rise in the ranks. But I think fifth round sounded really pretty spot on.
All right, and going into this year, these aren't necessarily the top five players in terms of talent in each conference, but they are the kind of the guys we're watching, the guys that we're keeping an eye on, the guys that we have a little bit of intrigue in. And I'll start it off tonight, staying with Oklahoma. My first two are both Oklahoma Sooners. The first guy is cornerback Jordan Thomas of Oklahoma. And it was kind of a surprise that he went back to Norman for a senior season. You know, you wonder if the whole Bob Stoops thing would have happened a little earlier if Jordan Thomas would have been gone and really, you know, added even more to what was already an outstanding cornerback class for the 2017 NFL draft. I'm intrigued by Thomas because I thought he was at worst going to be a day two guy. And now you wonder how far up he can push himself. The one thing is with corners, though, is it, kind of like quarterbacks at big schools, you don't get a ton of seniors. And that's because the NFL is so desperate for talent at the position that usually those guys get pushed up the draft board. So why did, Thomas go back? What does he look like coming out? Is he really 6 feet tall, like he's listed by Oklahoma? His high school numbers were not bad, 4.5 40 at 185 pounds. But you know what? He's still listed at 6'1" 185 by Oklahoma. Is it a case that he's kind of maxed out size-wise? A lot of questions, but a lot of intrigue. I think he's going to be a very good player. Again, he may not be a day one guy, because I think if he was, he probably would have come out as a junior, but definitely a guy that can find his way on day two if he has another solid season with the Sooners.
Thomas has a couple off-the-field issues. He had a suspension in 2015 for undisclosed rule violations, and he had arrest last summer for public intox. The on-the-field product, you've got a lot of production. He's played 38 games already. Like you mentioned, he's a senior. He's got that. If he lives up to that listed size, he's going to be at least in the range that scouts like. I think he's a little on the thin side. People would like to see, at 6 feet tall, a
About
guy like
200
that crack 190 pounds. But lots of tackles, seven interceptions in his career,
pounds.
26 pass breakups.
And he wasn't thrown at much in 2016 as opposed to 2015, where he put up his bigger numbers, had five interceptions that year. So,
But still 17 pass breakups last year. But I do think there is a great distrust. And you can correct me if you think this is wrong, but I think there's a great distrust among NFL scouts in Big 12 defensive backs, especially corners.
Oh, definitely. That's why I'm interested to see what happens if that was the reason he went back, because he didn't get the referral information that he expected to. Because again, a 6 foot, corner is a really hot commodity in the NFL, and we saw a guy, like Tease Tabor get drafted after running a 4.940 because he was 6'1", 6'2". So.
I think it was like a 4.6, but he was like even close to 4.7. But yeah, apparently he's had an up and down kind of camp, Tease, and lately been on the more positive side. So they must be throwing passes to players in front of him so he can get downhill, because that's where he was very good. It was when he was trying to turn, flip, and run downfield that he was going to get lost because of that lack of speed. I think Thomas is going to be around a 4.5 or high 4.4 guy, but I think those red flags off the field were another issue with him. I think that's another reason why a guy like that comes back to school. You got to show that you're mature. And for example, a player like Justin Gilbert, who came out, I think he played all 4 years and he still came out with that label of immaturity. So we'll see how Thomas responds. So far, trouble-free in 2017, but when you've got issues off the field 2 straight years, that's definitely going to be at least a question mark with NFL scouts.
Yep. Who's one of your guys you'll be watching this year?
So I want to talk about James Washington because he's been incredibly productive. The receiver out of Oklahoma State, who I mentioned earlier, a guy who averages over 19 yards per catch. But he kind of falls into that category that we have talked about extensively in the show as far as the size, height, weight standpoint of the guys who kind of tend to get overrated by draft Twitter and fall into that just a guy, that JAG category for receivers. He's listed at 6 feet tall and 205 pounds. But you cannot ignore how incredibly productive this player has been. He's averaged over 19 yards per catch in his career. And he has 152 catches, Seth, 26 touchdowns. Last year, he had 10 touchdowns. He obviously went back to school for a reason. He came back with Rudolph. He was another player who I think a lot of draft analysts thought that would declare early, and he ends up coming back. So I don't think he got quite the first round grade that he wanted, but he has a chance to be a riser. And again, He's on the young side. He's a true senior, so he's on the young side for senior players. He will only be 22 at draft time. I think this guy, Washington, has a good chance to be a day two player. You know, it's going to come down to 40 time for him because we already know he can win contested catches. We know he can get open downfield in the Big 12, but the production is there. And I think if you are 6 foot and 205 pounds or 210 pounds, whatever he's going to come out and weigh, if you can run, it puts everybody at ease. That's kind of like Chris Godwin coming out of Penn State. He was about that size coming out, and you see that he could get open. He's winning contested catches, and he's having a phenomenal training camp. And because he ran in the 4.4s, that pushed him into day two. He was an early entry, but I think Washington can kind of fit into that same range.
The next guy on my list is another Oklahoma Sooner, and I'm going to butcher his name all year, but I'm really interested to see kind of where he continues to develop as a player, and that's Abanyu Okoronkwo. He's the linebacker, number 31. He's listed at 6'1", 245. He was playing, mostly off the ball his first 2 years. Didn't start at all his first 2 years.
I believe that first name is pronounced Obanaya, but I think he's going by Ogbo right now.
Ogbo. All right, perfect. I can say that. So,
That's what we're going to call him on the show for the year. We're going to call him Ogbo. But yeah, this is a guy. I think the flag on him is that he had shoulder surgery this past spring.
and so you want to see where he's going to play. Where is he going to line up? It's not that I question his ability, because he's certainly played better every year. Again, he didn't start at all as a redshirt freshman or a redshirt sophomore. Started all 12 games in 2016 as a redshirt junior and recorded 9 sacks. But is he a guy that you want to play as a edge rusher? Is he a guy that can play off the ball and then kind of give you a pass rush ability? What is he as a player moving forward? And your favorite thing, 3 pass breakups as a linebacker. So he is dropping into coverage as well. He looks like a good athlete.
And all three of those pass breakups came last season too. So
Yes.
for a linebacker to break up, 3 to 5 passes in a season is pretty solid work, because you don't see, especially for a guy who's known for maybe rushing the passer, that's some solid work. He had 9 sacks and 3 pass breakups, forced 2 fumbles. So he's kind of moving around. He's doing a lot of the things that you like from a production standpoint. I think that Tony Pauline still gave him a very late day three grade coming into the season.
And that's my question on him, is the size. I don't know if he's really 6'1". Now you're talking about a shoulder. Is he, a college linebacker and nothing more? And again, there's nothing wrong with that, but I have those questions about both he and, Baker Mayfield. Are they guys that whose games translate to the next level?
And we've seen a pass rusher 2 years ago out of Oklahoma, Eric Striker, who was just incredibly small, so small that they wanted to see if they could even move him to safety, but then he just wasn't an athlete. He wasn't
At
fast
all.
enough to move to defensive back by any means. So yeah, that's a question with these smaller guys. They've got to meet these minimum thresholds. We see that the NFL is going to ignore them regardless of what we see on tape. We talked to Emory Hunt a couple of weeks ago, and he's very, determined in his views that what's on tape matters the most. But we do know that, although that might be true, we know that guys don't get chances because they don't meet certain thresholds. So it's going to be important for Ogbo to meet those thresholds, and then he's still going to be that tweener. So I can see why he has that late round grade right now.
Next guy for you.
We don't ever mention players out of Kansas, but I think we got to mention junior defensive end Durance Armstrong Jr. as a potential early entry player. I don't know what scouts think of him at this point, but he's coming off a 10 sack, 20 tackle for last season. He forced 3 fumbles. The Kansas Jayhawks have had such a pitiful football program. The fact that they even have a player that guys are talking about that has videos available on the internet on Draft Breakdown, this is a guy who I think is a potential early entry candidate just based on that early career production. When you see sophomores putting up those kind of numbers, you have to put them on your watch list. So this is not a guy that I know a ton about. He's listed at 6'4", 246. He was a three-star recruit. Armstrong, just from the little bit that I've seen and just from looking at his numbers and his height, weight, if those things check out and continue to improve, then this is a player who might end up being one of the higher Kansas players drafted in years.
Another guy that was kind of interesting to me, and it's because I enjoy watching interior offensive linemen play like a sadist, is and I'm getting this name,
Seriously?
and I'm getting this name thrown to me by people, and so that's why, I've watched some Kansas State. He doesn't have any film, but you can go find Kansas State stuff, and that's Dalton Risner. A big guy who plays center at 6'5",
You're
300
going deep,
pounds.
man. You're good. This
Yeah.
guy is not even on my list.
So, he's an Outland Trophy watch list guy, and so that's one of the things that when you're talking about offensive linemen and you're going to just start piecing together names, this is a guy that you look at because he's on that list. It's not because he's going to be great or anything like that. I've seen one game of him. He moves well for his size at 6'5". The question I have is, can a guy that's 6'5" play center in the NFL? That's going to be my question overall for him. And if not, where does he move to? Does he move to guard? Because the 300 pounds is going to be an issue. So you want to watch him again this year. He's only a junior, so there's a chance that he'll go back, but the interior offensive line in this draft class right now doesn't seem great. But again, it's early and interior offensive linemen don't really get any recognition by anybody.
I think the next guy that I wanted to mention, we're going to go back to Oklahoma for this one, but Mark Andrews, who some people, he came in as actually a big receiver, and now he's in that 6'5", 250 range. So he is being viewed as by some people as a player who could emerge as the tight end one in this class. Mark Andrews, he was actually a player who had, I think, a big catch against Ohio State in that early season game in Norman last year. Anybody who can get open and make plays like that, especially a big guy, 6'5", 250, we don't have high school athleticism numbers on this player, but what we do know is he's moved from receiver to tight end. So unfortunately, NFL coaches they're very stubborn in their approach with young tight ends. Like, they want to make sure these guys can block before they put them on the field. So that's why we have, for example, Randall Telfer is number one on Cleveland's tight end depth chart right now, where David Njoku, the big time athlete rookie tight end out of Miami, is third on their depth chart because he hasn't quite learned how to block yet. So I don't know, is that going to be a problem for Mark Andrews? His receiving is not going to be a problem, and that's what's going to propel him potentially into the top 50 of this draft class.
And
And
I can
he's a
tell.
redshirt junior, so we don't know if he's going to declare, but chances are good that a player like that would declare.
And I can tell you about Andrews. I watched him play in high school in Arizona, and he was, a fellow big time recruit along with Kyle Allen, the quarterback who went to A&M and now is at Houston, right? And he was a wide receiver in high school, and he was able to really out-athlete anybody on the field in Arizona. So I don't think there's going to be a question of how good of an athlete he is when he gets to the big league level and starts playing. I think he's going to be fine moving forward. The next guy is a safety out of West Virginia, and he's created some buzz, and Tony Pauline talked about him in his preseason preview. But Kaiser White, one great name.
That's Kevin White's brother, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, that's a wide receiver for the Bears. Kevin White, also out of West Virginia, that's his brother.
And Kaiser is a another in a long line of safeties out of West Virginia that just like to murder people. that's his calling card. That's what he's known for. But he played well last year too. He wasn't just a big hitter. He wasn't just a big enforcer. He was a guy that played well. He's a guy to watch this year. Kind of, can he go that Carl Joseph route, or is he going to be more KJ Dillon, where he's just a big hitter that doesn't, you know, do much else?
Yeah, I guess West Virginia has been producing these safeties. Kaiser White, like his brother, is coming out of the JUCO ranks, if I'm not mistaken. So,
yep,
this is kind of how they recruit. They're recruiting the top players out of JUCO. They're recruiting transfer players. They do that very well. Russell Shell, the running back that just graduated, had been a five-star recruit at Pitt. They're getting Will Greer now this year, who's a redshirt junior. He is a transfer from Florida, and he's the quarterback. He looked like a up-and-comer when he was at Florida 2 years ago. So I think that West Virginia has an interesting approach in getting players there, and it makes sense to me because – when you're at a school like West Virginia, you don't always have the avenue to get these five-star recruits. So if you can get a player like, you know, a guy like Kaiser White, highly regarded coming out of JUCO, and you could show him guys like Carl Joseph, like KJ Dillon, and some of the other defensive backs that have been drafted out of there in recent years, that's going to be encouraging for a player like that to come and show what he can do. And obviously they have a pretty good scheme to showcase these guys because they keep getting drafted.
You wanted to talk about the Renaissance in Texas a little bit.
Yeah, I'll group these guys together so we can move on. But Malik Jefferson, linebacker, Texas Longhorns, five-star recruit, junior. He's going to be a hot name, I think, and a guy who's going to make a name for himself this year. He's already kind of a player on the rise. And then you've got the left tackle, Connor Williams. He was a four-star recruit and another player who's going to be a riser because – you know, as crazy as it seems, Texas has had kind of a low profile because they haven't had a lot of draft-worthy prospects coming out lately. But they had Dante Foreman rush for over 2,000 yards. He ends up getting drafted in the third round. Played pretty well in Texans' first preseason game. Charlie Strong did recruit well. And so here's this five-star, here's this four-star guy at key positions. And I think these players both have a chance to rise. They're both juniors. I think they're both – I would lean toward both of these guys declaring after this year. This is going to test Tom Herman's recruiting ability because he's going to have more underclassmen. The more success you have, the more underclassmen leave every year. And I think Tom Herman's going to get Texas going in the right direction.
One name to watch for me going into this year, and he's a really intriguing case because he moved positions and put on a ton of weight. But he still looks fairly athletic. I won't say pretty athletic, but he still looks fairly athletic, and that's Tyrone Hunt at Baylor. He's a redshirt sophomore. That program, as we know, is close to imploding at this point. You know,
we're
really
just waiting for Jalen Hurd to show up next year as a receiver.
Right. And so Hunt is a guy to watch. He was 6'4", 245 coming out of high school. He's now listed at 6'4", 285 pounds. So did he give up some of that athleticism? What is he, you know, how does he look? I'm always intrigued by these guys that have kind of that Jonathan Allen positional move and what they end up doing. Now, I'm not comparing him in any way to John Allen, but just, you know, he's the one that ended up putting on all that weight and, you know, ended up being a pretty good player for Alabama. So we'll see what happens here.
Let's talk about the riser out of the Big 12. This is a player that you and I both like. He got a fifth round grade from Tony Pauline, apparently got a day three grade from the draft advisory board. And that's receiver Alan Lazard out of Iowa State. He had enough production as a sophomore, as a true sophomore. He was first of all, he was a big time recruit for Iowa State to land a guy like that. And then he had pretty good production as a sophomore that had people thinking he was a riser. And then he went out and had even better production as a junior, and somehow people are sleeping on this guy. I don't get it. I think he tested very well as an athlete coming out of high school as far as high school athleticism, 36-inch vert, 4.65 40. You'd like to see him improve on that 40 time, but on tape, you can see some separation with speed and by using his big frame. I really like Lazard. I think that day three grade is unfair to him, and I think he's going to move up into the day two range before all is said and done.
And your prospect that's likely to disappoint this year?
From the Big 12, it's Orlando Brown Jr. He is a humongous offensive tackle, 6'8", over 360 pounds. But then he says things like, well, he got his weight down to 345 or 348. When you're that big, you can lose that much weight, 15 pounds, in a matter of a week or two. But the key is keeping it off. And the thing is, this guy's never done it. He's never kept the weight off. And when you have players that big, they have trouble moving laterally. When you have players that have trouble moving laterally, they have trouble pass protecting as offensive tackles. Then they become offensive guards. And then can he move well enough to be a guard? We've talked about it on the show many, many times. We like guards that can move laterally and get push in the run game at the very least. And I think he's going to be a disappointment. And it's a shame. I do think he's going to be an NFL player. And I think he's going to, I think he's going to stick around on NFL rosters for at least a few years. But the thing is, people are going to judge him. His father played in the NFL and was actually a pretty decent player. Tragically, he died young. But he's probably best remembered. His father, Orlando Brown Sr., is probably best remembered for getting hit in the face with a penalty flag while playing with the Cleveland Browns and having some damage that caused some visual problems and caused an interruption in his career. But Orlando Brown Jr., I think he's going, and I think a lot of draft Twitter is already on this too. I think a lot of people are already pegging this guy as a disappointment. When you have offensive linemen, or really, frankly, any players that have trouble keeping their weight in check, these guys don't tend to work out.
Moving along to the Pac-12, ripe with intrigue at the quarterback position, we have Sam Darnold, Josh Rosen, excuse me, I almost said Josh Allen, Freudian slip, and the one and only Luke Falk. You can throw Jake Browning out of Washington in there. He's another guy that's going to be loved by Pro Football Focus.
We can just kind of briefly touch on Browning. He's going to be basically like another Matt Barkley type. And as one of my buddies, our buddy Chad Dinkins said when I texted him that earlier, maybe not even as good of an arm as Barkley.
Wow. Yeah, that's saying something.
Which is, let's get it out there. Jake Browning is a very, very good college quarterback. But I think that's pretty much all we need to say about him tonight. He's
When you
also
look,
going to be a junior, so I think he's going to be a four-year player. I want to put that out there.
yeah. So when you look at Darnold, he's going to be a redshirt sophomore, correct?
Right.
One, those guys typically don't come out, but when they do, they usually get either picked highly or have kind of a free fall. Now,
Well,
Kaiser
we've
can.
seen him come out recently more, like Jameis Winston, Johnny Manziel, DeShone Kizer. Those guys all went top 50. 52. Kaiser went 52.
And then when you look at him and when you look at Darnold, you have 9 games so far. His best game was probably the Rose Bowl, I would venture to say, because that was against the best opponent he played. And I still have some questions overall about the player. What about you?
You have to have questions about him. He's a, as you said, redshirt sophomore. He was doing his work as a 19-year-old. He was a very quality recruit. But remember, he did not start the season last year as their starting quarterback. He was beaten out by Max Brown. Darnold just turned 20 years old. He's got okay athleticism. He did really, really shine toward the end of the season. He just got on a great hot streak. But he does have that windup. He does have that windup that's almost Kevin Hogan-like. And then there's some questions that are popping up depending on who you're talking to and who's watching the tape. There are some questions about how much arm strength he has. We know this. Like, look, we could sit here and we could say, like, that windup, who cares? He's getting the job done. But you know as well as I do that NFL coaches don't think like that. So they're going to spend countless hours obsessing about shortening his delivery. This is just what happened. they are going to scrutinize the hell out of that when it comes time to do so. I hope, and I think that he probably is. I hope that Darnold is focusing on shortening that delivery. It's an important part from everything I've ever read about quarterback scouting. They're looking at the mechanics, they're looking at where the release point is and the delivery point, and scouts do not like that kind of windup. I think that people like the production that he gave, and they love the big game, the big moment performances that he gave toward the end of the year. You know, they caught fire. They started, USC started really poorly, and then Darnold takes over and they catch fire to the point where some people even talked about them. Maybe they should have been a playoff team. That kind of thing really enhances a guy's stock, but then when you break him down in the minutiae of scouting, that delivery is going to be a problem. And maybe that athleticism, and then the experience. Is he going to have enough experience? I don't think he's as physically gifted as a player like Kaiser who came out, or Jameis Winston, certainly not as accomplished as Winston on the field, or Johnny Manziel for that matter. Where do you slot this guy? I'm not sure. And, you know, if I had to guess, I think people are really jumping gun of putting him in the 2018 class. I know we've seen some more redshirt sophomores come out, maybe because of the collective bargaining agreement. That's our friend Blake Murphy's theory. But when all is said and done, I'm not sure that Sam Darnold declares after his redshirt sophomore year. He's still only going to be 20 years old until next June. So he would be incredibly, incredibly young to come out into the draft.
Josh Rosen has made headway, or kind of made waves the last couple of days for comments about college and things of that nature. That's going to come up, and we're not even going to really talk about the player because the player has done well on the field. He's been hurt as well, which is why I think there's more questions than answers coming into this year. Does he have the arm strength? How's the shoulder? Can it hold up, to the season and the pounding he's going to take this year? All of that is going to matter, and that's what we're going to have to watch. But teams are really going to dig into this guy. And does he love football? And people might scoff at that idea, but the reality is that you have a guy in Rosen who's made some comments and just talked in ways that, the NFL won't like. Let's just be honest, they won't like. This is going to come up, is it not?
There's a few things that come up with Rosen. For one, this sounds silly, but there was a short video of him. He had a hot tub in his dorm room, right? So is he a party guy? Remember Matt Leinart's hot tub pics? Like, is he a party guy? Does he, is his head in the game? There was a Josh Rosen went on a golf course and took a picture, put it on Instagram of him wearing an F Trump hat during the election last year. Is that something that's going to rub some owners the wrong way? I think it's pretty clear that some NFL owners are pretty staunchly in the Republican camp. And then you have the recent comments of Rosen where he is saying that, the way college football is set up, it doesn't leave, if you're going to dedicate your full self to college football, it doesn't leave you time for class or vice versa. And honestly, I agree with him on this point. I think there should be a scenario at least where you can allow college football players to maybe major in the sport that they're playing, especially those that are pretty confident in their pro prospects. At the very least, they get a jump start into getting into like a coaching career or maybe being a sports agent, something like that. They can focus their classwork on their sport, maybe some of their practice time or workout time counts toward that major. The system is flawed, there's no doubt. And I agree with Josh Rosen on that account. But we see already the pundits, the talking heads, they're coming out and they're basically being those guys that are like, I walked 10 miles of school uphill in bare feet in my day. They're those people that are like, back in my day, I had to do, I had to work a full-time job in the coal mines and then go to school and then practice football at like 3 in the morning. It's ridiculous the way people read into these quotes, and his full quotes are well thought out. They're intelligent. And I think they are something that should spur discussion. But we get the clickbait headline that says, Josh Rosen says if Alabama raised their SAT standards, they would be able to compete on the same level that they do now. And so you get those clickbait headlines. Such is the status of sports media. It's probably why it's crumbling, but that's where we are right now. And there's no question that is all going to be scrutinized when it comes to the big picture of Josh Rosen. Is he a good teammate? Is he dedicated to football? Is his shoulder healthy? They went 4-8 last year, Seth. We heard those criticisms about DeShone Kizer. Is all of this fair? I don't think it is, and it makes me bristle every single year, but it is reality, and those are what we're going to hear. 2 years ago, when Josh Rosen made his freshman debut, he was already a god, and now he might be quarterback 4 or 5. He might get the Connor Cook treatment, where he doesn't like to hang out with his teammates, or he might get the Kizer treatment, where he's not even a bad guy by any accounts. He's just a quote unquote weird.
And the other thing is, and we didn't even talk about it, is he's coming off a shoulder injury. So we're not even sure what he is as a player right now.
By all accounts, the shoulder is healthy. It was a nerve thing. It wasn't a structural, like rotator cuff thing. So it sounds to me like it was a pinched nerve. But for sure, I mean, it shut down his season, and we can't overlook that. So people are definitely going to want to see him get out there in games. I think that's something he can erase those doubts early in the season just by throwing a couple zingers. I think he's a very talented kid. But just if you follow some UCLA guys on Twitter or in the media, you just get those vague doubts about his personality that we saw out of players like Kizer and Cook the last 2 years.
Luke Falk, is he a real NFL prospect?
It depends what you mean by that, because I view him as like a Jared Goff light. A, he's older than Goff coming out, and B, he's a similar type of player. And anybody who's listened to this show for a while, we were kind of in the camp that Jared Goff was a day two to late day two guy, and he ended up going number one. He ended up having one of the worst rookie seasons of all time. And I'm not closing the book on Goff. He was my quarterback too, but I really was not very high on the class as a whole. Luke Falk to me is a player in that similar vein. He's coming out of the air raid offense. That comparison's easy. He's another player who's tall and skinny like Goff. Oh, but he put on weight this offseason. Well, we heard that about Goff too. He still looked like a stick. He's going to complete high percentage throws. I think he's going to have some problems. I thought Luke Falk's arm looked better last year than it did during his redshirt sophomore season. But he's another guy. He just takes a pounding back there. He's not particularly mobile, and I mean he's fairly athletic, but he's not going to run for yards. He's going to take a lot of hits, take a lot of sacks. I don't love his arm. I don't love the offense. I think he's a smart kid, a good kid. I think he's a very, very good college quarterback. And he's taken, I mean, similar to Goff, he's taken Washington State to heights that this program hasn't seen for a while. Goff takes Cal to an 8-5 season. Scouts kind of poo-poo the way that season ended, but when was the last time Cal had won 8 games? In Goff's freshman year, they were a one-win team. Luke Falk's kind of in a similar situation, but I think he's more like a fourth or fifth round guy. Is he an NFL player? Yeah, he's probably going to end up being a backup somewhere, but there are some people who are praising him based on his experience, his numbers, and putting him into a day one or day two category. I don't think he's that kind of guy.
Give me one of the players you're watching this year in the Pac-12.
One of the players I watched was earlier today, as a matter of fact, was Dante Pettis, the wide receiver out of Washington. And he was kind of overshadowed. He was in John Ross's shadow last year. Of course, John Ross broke the 40-yard dash record at the combine with a 4.22. But Dante Pettis, he's the son of former Major League Baseball player Gary Pettis. Dante Pettis is a 4.4 guy. At Washington's junior pro day, he had a 41-inch vertical. He had a sub 6.8 second three-cone time. He's a burner. He's an athlete. He's a player who makes really good adjustments to bad throws, and a guy that frankly was open a few times that Jake Browning missed him because he underthrew him. But I think that Dante Pettis is in for a big year. I think he becomes their go-to guy in Washington this year, and they do throw a ton. You know, Browning put up big numbers, even if he's not physically the most gifted quarterback. He's going to throw it a lot. He's going to throw it around the yard a lot. And Dante Pettis is a player I think is going to break out as a senior and be a riser.
A guy that's going to be intriguing to follow this year for me plays inside linebacker for the USC Trojans, Cameron Smith. Now, I think he usually lines up outside as well, but he's, you know, as Eric Stoner liked to call him, an off-ball linebacker. So he's not a guy that's going to rush the passer. Smith kind of burst onto the scene in 15 after Sua Cravens was nicked up, and they were and Smith took over the role. The question I have with Smith is this guy Scooby Wright? You know, this guy that just makes all these plays defensively and is the right size to be an NFL every down, you know, inside linebacker, but does he have the athletic ability to continually play at that high level? I do wonder that. I do question that, and that's why I'm really intrigued to watch him this year.
You know, if he grows from his high school athletic profile, then it Scooby Wright's like a really interesting comparison because in some ways when he went to test athletically, he didn't disappoint, but then in other ways he did, and he just wasn't a sideline to sideline guy. But he's a player who still got drafted in the seventh round, and he's sticking around with your Arizona Cardinals, correct?
Yep.
So and still a guy who makes plays that fans love and root for this guy. So Cameron Smith's interesting. When you were starting to talk about USC linebackers, I thought you were going to mention Porter Gustin, their outside linebacker slash defensive end, who is a big time recruit. He's on my watch list, but I wanted to talk about still another. I'll lump these two guys together too because they are also USC guys. The running back, Ronald Jones II, he is a player who through 2 years, he's a running back, and he has eclipsed a total of 2,000 yards over his first 2 seasons, and now he becomes the go-to guy in that offense. So last year, 1,000-yard running back. The year before, 900 yards as a freshman. And this year, he becomes the go-to guy, and big things are expected out of him. He's kind of built like Jamaal Charles, where he's about 6 feet tall and maybe 200 pounds soaking wet. So he's maybe a shade under 200 right now, but a 4.4 40 guy, big time speed. He can catch the ball, although they don't throw it to him a lot. I like Ronald Jones the second a lot. And another player who was a big time recruit for them, Iman Marshall, the cornerback, 6'1", listed at 6'1", 200. He was another five-star recruit. And he is, by all accounts, expected to declare early after this season. So, Iman Marshall, the cornerback, and Ronald Jones. USC's got some really good talent this year. In my opinion, they should, I don't know if run away with the Pac-12, but they should win the Pac-12 again. And I think they're a team that could compete for a playoff spot.
When you talk about running backs in the Pac-12, a guy that is ultra productive, you know, been kind of a real focal point of the Washington Huskies offense is Myles Gaskin. But again, we're talking about a small guy, 5'9", 191 pounds, 5'10", excuse me, 191 pounds. Only a junior, but he's put up over 1,300 yards both years, 14 touchdowns as a freshman, 10 as a sophomore. You wonder if the NFL will like him as much as I'm assuming the draft people will, because we remember Duke Johnson, we remember Ameer Abdullah, we remember these guys that are a little bit smaller, shifty runners that put up big numbers and then don't really do much or can't stay on the field consistently. Does Gaskin, and he hasn't shown a ton in the passing game. Only 25 career receptions for a guy that's, quote unquote, undersized for the position. Is he going to be able to catch the ball in the NFL? Just because he hasn't doesn't mean he can't. That's one of our big, things here on this podcast is just because a guy has not done something doesn't mean he can't, but it will be something that's a question at the next level as well. So Gaskin's an intriguing, interesting prospect to watch here because of his size, but he's been ultra productive, almost 6 yards a carry for his career. Kind of the kind of numbers you want to see until you get to that build.
Yeah, I think you're right. Gaskin is going to be a player who's going to be criticized for his build, and I don't think he's a Duke Johnson or an Ameer Abdullah. I think he's going to be more like a guy who came out of Virginia, like Taequann Mizzell, who came out of Virginia, or Josh Ferguson, who came out of Illinois, which isn't to say that he's not an NFL player, but he might be a later round draft pick or a priority free agent because he is a smaller guy. He wasn't a great recruit. He wasn't a big time recruit. He wasn't, he's not a guy who, from what I could tell, has gotten a lot bigger. But he's got some excitement to him. He's still a guy splitting carries with LeVon Coleman, too. So you've got that. Let's talk about another Washington Husky who is getting run. Vita Vea, he's the defensive lineman. He is a Danny Shelton type as far as build, but he's billed as a much better athlete, much more explosive. We've seen these big defensive linemen come out of Washington recently, and I think they've kind of been clunkers, man. I'm not trying to be rude, but I think they've kind of been clunkers, and Draft Twitter has overrated them because Washington will move these big behemoth defensive lineman to defensive end, and then they'll have like a highlight clip play, and Draft Twitter goes gaga. What do you think about that?
I'm not a fan of a guy that, okay, I shouldn't say that. I like Vita. I like the way he plays. But much like Shelton, I'm not going to draft him early. So he's not a guy I'm going to bring in and, in the first round. He's a guy I want on day two that can be a rotational piece. That's how I look at him. He's got 6 sacks in his career. That's pretty good for a big dude from the interior. You just want to see, and the I think he had 6.5 tackles for loss last year. So again, he's a very productive guy. You just want to see how many snaps he can play, how often he can be on the field, and that's the question you have with these big guys are, there's only so many Dontari Poes in the world. And he's already in the NFL. The next guy for me is going to be one of the another, kind of interior defensive lineman, another big guy. His brother was the one that made me kind of revise my how much I like these big guys. And that's Lotulelei. Lowell's 6'2", 310 pounds, younger brother of star Lotulelei.
This is a guy I left off on purpose because I knew that you were going to like this guy.
The question I have now is, and Star was my top prospect in a terrible 2013 first round.
Not a bad call, by the way. I think we
No,
established
no.
that last year because he's turned out to be a pretty good player.
Yeah, but I mean, again, what's the cost? Is a guy like Star, who I love, is he really worth the 13th pick or whatever, wherever he was picked in 13?
Not usually, maybe in that case.
Maybe in that class. So, I overrated him, even though in that class, again, maybe he is rightfully the one of the top players. But I think Lowell is maybe one of those guys that, again, you get on day two, a rotational defensive lineman that has upside to be a every down type of player, but he's not a guy that you're going to want to pick top 15, at least right now for me. A guy you want to pick top 15 and expect to be an every down contributor.
When you get a guy coming out of Utah, sometimes you think he's going to be an older prospect. So at least that's not the case with this player. But Yeah, I've kind of got to the point now where just all interior defensive linemen, unless they're those explosive pass rushing three techs that are just like athletic freaks, a player like a unicorn like Aaron Donald, I'm not really that interested in them that early on. We talked about, you mentioned this guy earlier tonight. We talked about him ad nauseum last year, Jonathan Allen. He kind of falls into that category for us, and he was a day two player for me. That is not a slight. I think of day two players as starting players. It's just, you know, what we're talking about as far as perennial all pros, potential all pros, potential perennial pro bowlers. It just doesn't, some of those things just don't add up. I wanted to talk about another running back. I'm going to go back to the running backs because I'm going to touch on two right now. One player to watch, and that's Royce Freeman out of Oregon, who looked like a dynamo his freshman year and now a senior. His stock has kind of tailed off. He's a 5'11 player, 200, 5'10, 5'11, 230 pounds. You look at this guy, he's thickly built. He looks every bit at 230 pounds. He's got a little bit of shiftiness to him, especially at the line of scrimmage for a guy that big. But he does look like he has heavy feet too. He gets out to that second level and he doesn't seem to make guys miss. You know, I think he's kind of a poor man's Carlos Hyde. And I liked Carlos Hyde. He was a day two guy for me. I think he's kind of become a forgotten man to this point, so he's got a lot to prove coming in as a senior. But Freeman's an interesting player to me because I think he has speed. He has soft hands, and that's why I compare him to Hyde. I don't think he's as good of a blocker, and I don't think he finishes the run by falling forward for another 1 or 2 or 3 yards like Hyde always did. It's more like when Freeman hits the wall, he's done. But he's got size, he's got strength, he's got a little bit of speed once he gets into open field. And I think he's a player that NFL teams are probably going to like more than draft Twitter is going to like. But I have seen some draft Twitter guys that really like him. Sticking with the running backs, I want to move on to a player who I think might disappoint the DraftNik community, Kalen Ballage from Arizona State. The fact of the matter is, he just has always split time throughout his career. Some of his best running work has been out of the Wildcat, which is kind of unusual. This is a player who's 6 feet tall, 225, 230 pounds. By all accounts, a very good athlete who's going to test very well. But he has not been able to put the production on the field. He's a player who has 1, 2 good games a year, both rushing and receiving, and then just kind of disappears. He had 15 touchdowns, I think, last year, 14. 8 of those came in one game against Texas Tech, which is like playing at your pro day.
I like Texas Tech's defense. I don't know what you're talking about there.
Get out of here, man.
The guy to watch that could really take off this year, and I think part of it is their defense has just been so dynamic, and that's Isaiah Oliver out of Colorado. He's going to get to play now because they had two cornerbacks drafted in Chidobe Awuzie and Akilah Witherspoon. And now the big sophomore, or the big junior now, is going to get a chance to fill those shoes, and those are big shoes to fill. He's going to be one to watch. I think you hit the nail on the head with this one.
Yeah, Oliver, and that's exactly the reason why. I mean, he's now you see the top two corners go, Awuzie and Witherspoon go on to the NFL. They also had a safety and Thompson go to the NFL. So this was a very productive defensive backfield, and to see what Oliver did as a sophomore, and he's got the size, and he's worked with. You know, obviously this is a well-coached secondary at Colorado. So you like what you see out of this. And I think now Isaiah Oliver becomes the man. Can he pick up where those other guys left off? Because both Awuzie and Witherspoon were day two picks. And they were both seniors. So Oliver's a junior now. He might be a 2-year player to watch for us because maybe guys don't come out of Colorado early. But He's certainly a guy I've got on my watch list going into this year, and I think he's a potential riser. People are always looking for risers out of these middle of the road but big conference Power Five schools. And Isaiah Oliver really fits the bill for me, just from a size, speed, and production standpoint early in his career. And now he gets a chance to shine full time.
Anybody else you want to hit on before we head out tonight?
No, I think we've covered a lot of ground. Yeah, we're trying to breeze through these previews this year. We doubled up tonight. We might have some single shows. We do have at least one guest lined up for later in these previews, so we'll just see how things shake out. But we know that I know August 26th, I think, is the first spattering of games, but it's really August 31st when college football season really starts, when the Ohio State Buckeyes play the Indiana Hoosiers in Bloomington on a Thursday night. So, apologies to my Cleveland Browns. I won't be watching your fourth preseason game against the Chicago Bears that night. I'll have to let people fill me in on how awesome DeShone Kizer looked that night.
All right. Well, thanks as always for listening. We'll be back next week. I think we're gonna do a single show on the Big Ten. They're pretty good
We're going to
conference.
do a single show on Ohio State, I thought.
Oh, no, that's your other podcast that you're gonna with you and your daughter, so you can
Okay.
all the airtime you need. But
She's a great co-host. She lets me talk the whole time.
thanks for listening as always. We appreciate it. Check us out on SoundCloud, check us out on iTunes. We'll be back next week, and you guys enjoy the first round of preseason NFL football.